All right. Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 5th, 2017, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again and good morning. First item on our agenda today is consideration of proclamation for September as National Recovery Month. And we've got Jill Hill and Jade Sporer here today. Come on up. So one of us, and I would prefer it to be you guys, needs to read the proclamation in, but I'll do it if you don't want to. And please have a seat or
go. All
right. Well, I have it, so I'll read it.
Oh, by the way, can you just go ahead and sign that afterward and
hand
it to them?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Surry County Board of Supervisors, National Recovery Month, mental and substance use disorders affect all communities nationwide. But with commitment and support, people with these disorders can achieve healthy lifestyles and lead rewarding lives in recovery. By seeking help, people who experience mental and or substance use disorders can embark on a new path toward improved health and overall wellness. The focus of National Recovery Month, this September is to celebrate their journey with the name Join the Voices for Recovery, Strengthen Families and Communities. Recovery Month spreads the message that behavioral health is essential to health and one's overall wellness, and that prevention works, treatment is effective, and people recover. The impact of mental and substance use disorders is apparent in Story County and affects everyone in the community. Through Recovery Month, people can become more aware and able to recognize the signs of mental and substance use disorders, which can lead more people into needed treatment. Managing the effects of these conditions can help people achieve healthy lifestyles both physically and emotionally. The Recovery Month observance continues to work to improve the lives of those affected by mental and or substance use disorders by raising awareness of these diseases and educating communities about the prevention, treatment, and recovery resources that are available. For the reasons above, I am asking the citizens of Story County to join me in celebrating their September as National Recovery Month. I, Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim the month of September 2017 as National Recovery Month in Story County and call upon our community to observe this month with compelling programs and events that support this year's observance.
Well read.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm Jill Hill with YSS and Jake Spore with YSS, and we are celebrating National Recovery Month with multiple events during this month. One of them is Mental Health Expo, which will be held at Memorial Union on September 19th in the evening time. And we have a speaker, Sarah Benikowski, that is going to be speaking. She's a well-written author and a comedian, and she'll be doing an event to help spread the word on life and coping with mental health and substance use the opportunity is there for them to recover. I'll get it right. And then I believe that, Sally, you wanted to add something about your event as well.
Yes, certainly. Thank you. And on behalf of Community and Family Resources, I'm Sally Carnes, and I would like to thank the board for your support and recognition of September as National Recovery Month. In addition to the expo, we're excited to offer our fifth annual Walk for Wellness, Race for Recovery. So it's a 5K. Will be held on September 16th at Ada Hayden in Ames. And there are lots of ways to get involved. I'd like to invite all of you. Everyone's welcome to join us to either register to run or walk, a volunteer, or even just show up to show support. We know that so many in our community are affected every single day by mental health and substance use disorders. And we certainly thank the board for your ongoing support of the Recovery Month message that recovery actually can and does happen.
Super. Thank you. Board, questions, comments, or a motion to declare this national, proclaim this National Recovery Month in Story County?
I would make such a motion with the note that where it says I, we change it to we in the proclamation.
Yeah, I, the Story County Board of Supervisors. This sounds right up par for the course for me with the Alabama education, but thanks, Laura. And I will note that I didn't write this.
Yes, we
have a motion and a second. So we're changing the word I to we. Any further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
G. Aye. Sanders, I, or we. Oh, no, that would be I. Do you guys want to retype this and have me sign a clean copy, or
no.
Just keep it like that?
And can we do a photo?
Sure. We love photo opportunities.
Why not? And I'll just leave some packets.
Okay.
And I'll note the jeans are in support of United Way. We're all picking in a bus to wear jeans.
Yes, that's fine.
So you got one, Kim?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thank you so much.
All right. Now we're to public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or really anything they want to address. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving the microphone, minutes for August 29th.
No consideration of the minutes as presented.
I would second.
Motion and a second. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No personnel actions this week. Consideration of claims for September 7th.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Bid opening for the generator at the Human Services Center. Cal Pearson and Jeff Harris are with us today for this bid opening.
How are you? I'm doing a bid test. We did have an addendum late last week. So.
All right.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
how you doing?
Good. Thank you. Good.
Okay.
So there's this line to check that the event is received.
Thank you.
Morning, Cal.
Morning.
All right, so we're getting nearer the end of a long process.
Yes, I'll study and follow it up by bid. So, and we did receive two bids, looks like.
And While they're deciding which one to open first, for the members of the audience that may not be aware, what this is we're talking about putting in full generator capabilities at the Human Services Center, much like this building and the Justice Center, while a little different capacities, have generator capabilities. We've not had that at the Human Services Center. We did, in fact, have a room in the Human Services Center serving as our backup EOC, Emergency Operations Center, in the event of a disaster, and decided that it would be prudent if we could actually power it in the event of an emergency, which led us to this study, led us to the recommendation of going to this kind of capacity, and now we're finally to the bid of what it's going to cost us. Jeff, go ahead.
Correct. Yeah, thanks. Two bids. I'll open them in the order they were received. First from HPC Construction and Ames. So they do have their bid bond included in the amount of 5% of the bid total. OK. Okay, they do, again, it's HPC Construction from Ames. They do acknowledge receipt of addendum number one. As they say, performance bond was included. Their base bid amount, $245,000. And they indicate a total of 25 weeks of work. A lot of that lead time is a generator lead time and also precast concrete for the screen wall that goes around. So we knew the generator was probably in a 12 to 16 week lead time item. So the second bid is from Aircon Mechanical.
Where are they located?
Aircon Mechanical is from Des Moines.
Can I spell that?
Just AIR-CON, Aircon.
Oh, okay, thank you.
They do include their bid bond in the amount of 5% of the bid total. They do acknowledge addendum number one. They have a bid amount of $341,611. And indicate a time frame of 26 weeks. So those are the bids. I guess our recommendation would be to hold. You know, we'll review things and then probably come back next week, maybe make a recommendation if that PC is appropriate.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Next item is consideration. And I'm going to say initial consideration of Resolution 1829, first reading of the closure of the bridge on West 190th over Squaw Creek in Section 20 of Franklin Township. So, Darren Moon, this stems from a conversation that we had, well, that's been going for 5 or 6 years, but really had in earnest for this board first time last week. What we came out of last week with was very clear intention by each supervisor individually that we were moving toward permanent closure of this bridge. Nothing formal, no formal vote taken, but all three of us made that intention really clear, and then a desire to move through both this week and next week with the resolution that would, if enacted, would ultimately close the bridge, with a real effort being trying to get as much community input as we can, especially the estimated 50 cars a day that utilize this bridge, making sure that they have full opportunity to weigh in. Aaron.
Sure. The main thing I wanted to update you on is I did take two calls since our last meeting. The first was from the Squaw Valley Homeowners Association, and they just have a question on if they're able to put up private road signs on the Squaw Valley subdivision. I told them I didn't think so, but we do have a meeting with the county attorney next week talking about some other private road issues. I told her we would address it there and get back to them. But they did dedicate that to the public when they made that subdivision, so I think it'd be confusing to put private road signs on it. But we'll talk more about that. And the other one was an individual over at Cameron States, I think, contacted you as well. And attorney.
Mr. Ferrari?
Yeah. And had concerns about the closure and then the paving of 505th. So I explained the history of that to them. Our closing this could actually reduce the traffic on 505th to the state's gravel, so that could actually help with their situation. So those are only two that I had since our meeting last week, so that's all I really have. I assume we'll have this on the agenda next week for final approval of the resolution.
So that would be my hope, that the board needs to move in that direction. This is a standard bridge closure resolution. I'm not going to read the whole thing, except for the last paragraph is, now therefore be it resolved by the Story County Board of Supervisors that the bridge on West 190th Street over Squaw Creek in Section 20 of Franklin Township will be closed, and that the official closure date coincide with the opening date of the bridge that is currently under construction on West 190th directly to the east of Squaw Creek. There's a smaller bridge that goes across a small little tributary of Squaw Creek that we're in the process. It's in construction now, probably several weeks before it closes, before it's completed, and it services the subdivision that runs off of West 190th to the north. Darren, anything to add, board? Any questions or comments?
I thought our
meeting last week went as well as he could have for a public hearing. I think kudos to the Ames Tribune for a well-written article. I think it really kind of summed up what the meeting was about, and I am kind of surprised that there were no reach-outs that I got from anybody concerned pro or con. So if you got anything, Rick, or you got anything, Darren, that was all I heard.
I had some.
Okay.
Yeah, so do you want to weigh in with those, or do you want to...
I did receive two contacts, one from Brian Thorsey, and then the other one from a homeowner that lives on 510. Okay, both trying to argue for us at least looking at not doing anything permanently. The comment that I received from Brian Torsey, I did think about, I got it on Thursday, and I did think about it this weekend, and it had to do with the fact that there aren't many places for Ames to be able to grow geographically, and a concern that our bridge count was too low. The count we got from 2015 at 40 was cars per day was too low, and that there were still about 40 houses to be built out in Cameron Estates, and that eventually, long term, some of the land that right now is owned in acreage, like 160 acres or 80 acres, might, to the north, might convert into the logical place to go ahead and put more housing. That's what I got from Brian. And then the other person was talking more about the family travel. And I want to let both of you thank both Brian and the other person who I got the impression wanted to be anonymous, that I did think about it. But I still come down to supporting the bridge closure for all the reasons I think stated last week. The conversion of it into a pedestrian trail for the conservation seems like a moderate method in case ever a future board 20 years from now would be looking at growth to the north and saying something else has to happen out there. But I did want to just respond to both of these people because I told them I would think about it, and I did think about it. So I'm where I was last week.
Perfect. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm trying to think through, and I had two really nice, long conversations with Brian. I can't come up, Darren, with 80 or 160 acres north of 190th, west of Squaw Creek, that is developable ground with everything taken out. There's a seed company right there at what would be the extension of 190th over the County Line Road. Now, I come up with a lot of ground that's west of 505th and north of Cameron School Road, but not north of 190th, and there's a whole bunch of ground that could develop south of Cameron School Road, but I can you picture 80 or 160 acres north of 190th and west of Squaw Creek that's developable ground at this point? I can.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was our conversation during
the acres. Absolutely. And I think it's important to respond to at least what our thinking is at that point. And that's what I struggle with there. The other one is, I think you hit on a really valid point. A future board can sure decide to come in and build a new bridge anywhere a future board determines we need a new bridge. And so while I would think this action that we seem to be moving toward would be the end of this bridge as a vehicular crossing, it doesn't mean that in the future something else might not change. With that, we got a couple options here. So I believe that we committed to holding this until next week. And so if you agree with that, I'd like a motion to hold final consideration on Resolution 1829 to next Tuesday. If you don't believe that, you do have the authority to go ahead and move that we go ahead and adopt it now.
I'd just like to ask Darren one more question. It's kind of a follow-up on what we had talked about last week. You said you had piling issues and some structural concerns there, and it was a small dollar fix, but if we were to move to closure on this, this is something your department would still do to shore up the structure?
The one piling in the pier, yeah, we can still do that one.
Okay. And as a state, we've just got done with our two-year inspection. Would this still be a structure that the state is going to inspect every 2 years, even if it is a pedestrian bridge?
Yeah, we do that inspection. This is actually the federal government requires we inspect it every 2 years, so we will. That'll be another question. When we officially close it, like we have one south of Ames that's historical, technically we still have to inspect that. I'll have to verify it. This one, but I would, if any pedestrian traffic's using it at all, I think we still have to have it in our inspection.
Well, so even if it's not required under the Federal Bridge Program that we inspect it, we could still inspect it as part of that. I mean, we're the ones paying for it, right? So we could put it on our list even if it wasn't one of those required bridges.
Yeah, that, I just wanted to be clear as far as you move it from one status to another, just what our obligations are going to be on a going forward basis. And are you going to commit dollars today to give it some structural improvement that you noted in your presentation?
Yeah, as minor as that is, that's typically something we handle in-house without board approval anyway, so that probably wouldn't be official action to
do. Right.
Okay, that's
just part of his existing budget.
That's just what I wanted to know, just to be clear. So I would have comfort in saying we bring this back to us next week. So I would move consideration of resolution 1829, first reading of closure of the bridge on West 190th Oshawa Creek in section 20 of Franklin Township.
Final
reading next week, the September 12th.
Mm-hmm. I second that.
Motion is second. So I get a motion to say, board, any further conversation?
None.
Well, it's not a public hearing item. If there's anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this before we take this initial action, please know that you're welcome. Not necessary, but you're more than welcome to say something if you'd like. Okay, so this action, if approved, simply means that this resolution will be finally considered for action next Tuesday. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. So that motion to consider have final consideration of resolution 1829 next week passes. Good. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren. Next is discussion and consideration of the addition of a third detention officer position. So we added two detention officer positions. Was that last year or was it 2 years ago?
That was last year.
Last year we added two detention officer positions. The request at that point was for three. We came to two, said that, and this was the previous board, said that we wanted to get the metrics of how two impacted us and then come back and consider a third a year later. That's where we are now. Captain Thomas, take us through it.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Rick. Yeah, so as you just mentioned, historically, a couple years ago we came to the sitting board and just talked about the needs in the jail for additional personnel, outlining the impact that we felt like it would have on our overtime and the ability for our individuals to get time off. One of the things I want to provide to you, Micah, do you have those amended? We have corrected PDFs to give you guys. So on the x-axis at the bottom, those numbers, and we attempted to convert from PowerPoint to PDF. It skewed the whole x-axis. So basically, those graphs that you had are all accurate. It just the amended copies, and you'll get kind of.
Yeah, I didn't speak the code of 41821. What month that was?
I had to call my husband in for a consult because he threw a number and he figured it out. Did not know which month start and end, but we figured out based upon the numbers that if you follow it back and divide it by 365, it started the count in 1903.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was kind of a test for you guys, so Laura's job well done on your part.
Great job, Laura.
No, we apologize for that, but in the conversion, the numbers did get skewed. And so what you're looking at, the charts haven't changed any. It's just a reflection of the last 3 years and the impact that you can see starting in right around September of 16, the difference that putting on the additional positions has made. And so one of the things we want to come back and just, and first of all, just let me thank the board for always being willing to have these conversations. You guys have always been great to work with, and we do appreciate all the cooperation that we have with you guys. But we are looking to request that third position so that we can continue to work on bringing down our overtime. And we also, for our staff city, we run 24/7 back there, and corrections is a tough job. And we want to be able to give those folks that work back there the time off that they deserve to keep them from being burnt out, but also because it's the right thing to do. You'll see in one of the charts that we gave you where we're actually now getting close to being able to give people the time off that they actually earn. And so that is the goal. And for us, when we have coverage issues running short because of FMLA, military leave, et cetera, we think this third position is going to help fill that gap and make right back, at least make closer to right, our staff back in the jail. So we take any questions you guys might have, but our request today would be for you to grant that third position that we've talked about.
Several things. Swing me my ship pumping it.
Ship pumping, we've always done that where if we have somebody on, if we got three shifts, so if we have a shortage, I've got six people instead of five people working on second shift, and there's only five on first, we will bump somebody from seconds down to first to cover that shift. So then we're at full coverage, and that saves you the overtime of having to post overtime for that because that person did get bumped from second to first shift.
Mm-hmm. That would be an unwelcome thing to somebody.
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
Yeah, especially by union. You know, we have shift bids, and people expect to work the shift that they bid, and unfortunately, at times we have to move them. And so,
and before this, I think we were unbelievable how many times sometimes people were getting bumped multiple times throughout the month, so then you don't even know you're spending on first shift, second shift, third shift, mm-hmm. back and forth. So
would not be I can see where that would be an unwelcome thing in the career. We spoke to this mutually here this spring when we were talking, and I think just the budgeting process, we know that Dallas County has passed their bond and brought their jail will be coming online in the next several years. Realizing even if you didn't have any prisoners, you have to staff a jail for the likelihood that you could get somebody. I'm sitting here looking at the fact that our census will probably go down somewhat as Dallas County comes online. And it's just one of those considerations that this is still, as we take less prisoners, we have less revenue generated. And then you sit there and say, okay, is this a good fiscal decision? And I guess on quality of life, issue, the fact that you don't know when somebody will ask for FMLA. If you have a military employee, they do get put out on training and deployed. And I guess if you just help me walk through just where we're at, where you see yourself going forward. I mean, it obviously addresses a near-term problems, but could you help me just where you see yourself going forward?
I think we continue to have those challenges again because we do have FMLA. We do have the courts where we're thrown in, like a trial could pop up in the middle of, you know, two or three times a year that we'd have to actually secure that trial. Also sickness as well as FMLA for if somebody has an injury or surgery covering for those people, that's going to continue. I think we will always go out and seek for, when we have the low census of places that we could possibly fill, like right now, I guess right now we also are holding for ICE.
Okay.
Other opportunities in U.S. Marshals, too, they're starting to see a little bit of an upswing. We've had a marshal here for the last couple months that's starting to pick up a little bit again, too, so we'll see what that manifests into, too. So you never know, but we will always be looking to fill those beds when we can.
And I think to that point, Marty, also, that if we have these bodies back in the jail, that affords us the opportunity to go ask these other places for those inmates. Mm-hmm. If we have less staff back there and we're already struggling some, we're going to be less apt to be able to even entertain bringing those extra inmates in because we'll already be to our capacity from a staffing standpoint. And so this also gives us the opportunity to continue on that track and go out and try to bring that revenue into the county.
So remind me, and Mike, I think this question is more for you. It feels like in your presentation 18 months or 2 years ago, you said that a average jailer, by the time we include training and vacation and sick time and everything else, an average jailer will spend somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 to 1,600 hours a year actually working in the jail.
That number is correct.
Yeah. And so then I go back and I look at what happened to our comp time, overtime, by adding these positions. And in essence, we went from 4,580 hours of comp time and overtime in 15-16 down to 3,093 in 16-17. Basically one position, I mean, that we're not paying overtime or comp time for. Now that was the addition of two positions. Now we're just talking about a third. My question, well, Horace, I'll let you, if you got questions first, and then I'll ask mine.
I think I'm going to be somewhere along the same line as Rick. As I was sitting there doing my math, and I couldn't remember how many prisoners we held, first of all, at maximum capacity for six DOs.
Oh, our jail capacity is 104 beds. We can go up to 120, and we can actually fluctuate that if we get a permission from the state jail inspector or from the Department of Corrections. So just like we did in the old jail, there was times I remember when I'm working that we were at our capacity of the old jail was 46. When I was there, we were 65 every day. So it depends on what the pushes and pull-offs are each day. Right now, we're not at that higher census than we were when we first moved in. But that could change.
Okay. So the reason I ask that now, going back to I think where Rick and I might be on the kind of the same wavelength, is the addition of one person, as I look here, the cut down about really how many hours of overtime or comp time do you think that that would save? Because I see a gap already of, if I'm looking at, I believe it is overtime, including comp time, compared to unfilled shifts. That's the slide I'm looking at. I think it's about number three or four. All right. And you have 691, correct?
691 8-hour shifts.
Right. That's what I did the math.
And then the later time that
okay.
People were
gone. And so then the blue represents 3,033 of hours, or does it represent 3,000 shifts? They can't, because that'd be too many for
those are hours.
Okay. I had trouble making the switch. So what I'm really looking for is, what do we say in bringing on a third person then? You know, how far, how deep will that person go into actually cutting down on the overtime? And when I say save, I'm not necessarily talking dollars. I'm talking about stress on staff and ability to take vacations.
Well, I'd just like to point out, if you look at the orange line on that, which is the number of unfilled shifts, if you were to convert those to hours, mm-hmm. those are roughly 210 8-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take 200 times 8, that's about 1,600. There's, if you add that to the reduction of people, there's the two people that we've added right there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a better year this year than we had last year. We had less people gone than we did prior to that.
Yes, and Lars, I'll give you the answer from my perspective. And I think for any of us to answer that question would really be a guess of exactly how it's going to impact it. What this empirically shows is that the addition of the two positions did, in fact, positively benefit Story County from a fiscal perspective, but at least as importantly, and probably more importantly, from a personnel perspective, we saw that little drop where people actually got to use more of their vacation. One of the things that was really frustrating, I know, for me and the other board members a couple years ago, is we got jailers who could have vacation that they want to use that they're not able to use because we can't let them go. And the wear and tear that that takes on your workforce is unbelievable. My question is simply, Alyssa Wickall, have you had a chance to review these numbers, and do you have anything? So Alyssa's our HR director. If you had a chance to review these, do you have anything to add?
I have had a chance to review these. I met with Micah last week, and I appreciate the information he brought forward. I did ask him to put together some other stuff, because when we're looking to add a position, we look to see the cost-benefit analysis. Thanks. Sorry, John. And by adding a position, which roughly costs anywhere up to about $70,000 to add a new DO, depending on the benefits that they take, and that's just wages and benefits, it's not a, so we increase the position, we're going to reduce our overtime by $70,000. That's not going to happen. They did make a good point. We don't know from year to year the FMLA that's going to be requested. We don't know work injuries. And we've had a few work injuries in the past that have taken employees out for weeks at a time. I do feel that the information that they provided with the short time since they've had the two detention officers really shows that there is a benefit to Story County to of adding those two. So that's the information that I had. I do also want to reiterate that we do provide our employees benefits. We want them to be able to use those benefits. So if we're not staffed accordingly and can't grant vacation time off, we will have you'll have staff burnout. We don't see quite as much turnover as we used to, but there still is a fair amount of individuals that are leaving detention officer positions for different hours, and because they've had the shift that they've been into, they're not able to have that. They've made plans, and the unknown, I think, is what's caused there. So.
So you were part of this proposal study?
Yeah, they brought it. Mike brought it over last week.
Yes.
And we went through the numbers.
Excellent. I appreciate that. That's why we have a personnel office.
Absolutely. Well, and I think Alyssa makes a great point that I just want to underscore for this board. Don't get caught up for a second that by adding a position that all in is going to cost us somewhere in the $70,000 range, that we're going to see $70,000 in savings in overtime. We're not. That's not what this would do. What we would see, we hope, if this position is brought on, is we would see less wear and tear on our staff. We would see our staff more able to utilize the benefits that I think we rightly offer to them, vacation being one of those, not getting bumped unless it's really necessary. We're going to see all of those tick down, or we should see all those tick down, but most importantly, as I see it, it gives us more flexibility to respond when we have somebody out, either on military leave or FMLA or some reason that they're out. It gives us more ability. This is one of those that the previous board, didn't quite know what we were getting into when we added these two positions. And I think the metrics show us it's been a really positive impact. I would expect, to a lesser extent, we're going to see the same kind of positive impact if we add this third. And I would hope that this gets us to the point that you guys feel like we are finally fully staffed in the jail, where you guys can accommodate whatever unforeseen circumstances we might have coming.
Yeah, so I wouldn't want to pigeonhole us into saying exactly that, but
I try, Barry.
But I think without question, it's moving in the right direction, and I think ultimately last year's numbers where we didn't have as many people out were because you added the two, so there was less stress back there. So if you're on the fence as to whether or not I don't really feel well today, I'm going to tell you it makes a difference when you have staff there covering all those positions. And so I applaud you guys for having the vision to be able to put those in place. So we think it's the right thing to do, or we wouldn't be bringing it in front of you today.
I remember, was it last year when the discussion was, or maybe 18 months ago, but there was some discussion about the female correction DO officers were really under stress because they were the ones who were picking up a lot of those extra shifts for needing to have a female officer. Would this officer be targeted to try and hire a female to help still alleviate that stress?
Correct. That's where that would bring that. Right now there is three different rotations in all three shifts. The only one that is missing on day shift, there is two three-people rotations and one two-person rotations. That's where we put that additional females on first shift, so then there would be an extra female on first like there is on the other two shifts, and there would be three-people rotations on all shifts then. So that's okay. That's what we're shooting for.
I heard all I needed to hear. I have comfort in the fact that I got to vote. I'm telling you, one of the things that when we added, because I was one of the somebody I used to work with, actually was hired. And I thank you for the trouble. Thank you for using our human resources department. I think you make a compelling argument, and quality of the workplace is important for the fact that you can lose somebody for the fact that they might enjoy the job, but for the fact that they do nothing but the job. And I think that we don't need to be putting ourselves in that position. I don't think you're going to chase a penny for penny, dollar for dollar. You're not going to get that. I agree. But I think this is something that I like it when you sit there and say you're looking for backfill dollars, knowing that in the future we will be losing census. Good. You already foreseen that. So I have comfort in moving consideration in addition to the third detention officer position.
I second that.
All right. Motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Barry, anything to add? Yeah. Alyssa, come on up.
want to make sure you put an effective date so we know, budgeting wise, when it becomes effective, whether you're approving it immediately or whatever the board
says. Okay.
I guess I didn't see that.
Yep. And Mark, did that, was that your concern, or do you have another one as well? Yep. What kind of effective date are you proposing?
We'd like to go as soon as possible again, but we know what the push is for. Yes. Yeah. But right now, Micah brings a good point that right now we're in the process of testing, so we don't have anybody to fill them with. We have to basically go through the recruitment process and get somebody to actually get a list first, too. So we've got some time there, too.
And Lisa, now that the money has come up, part of it, we shouldn't forget that. The sheriff's budget can absorb this, correct? Oh, she's moving to the mic. Okay.
At this point in time, the way we appropriate salaries is, or budget salaries, is 95% of the actual cost of salaries. So what would end up happening, quite frankly, is if it gets approved, it gets hired within the next, say, 2 or 3 months, whatever the case may be. When I look at amendment time in April, I will take that into consideration and amend for whatever salaries will be actuals.
Yes,
so yes, they would be absorbing it at this point in time until the amendment process happens.
We've committed, Loris, we've committed that we will fund 100% of filled approved positions. So if this becomes an approved position, the second it's filled, whatever cost there is there, we've committed to, we're going to find a way to fund it by the end of the year.
All right.
So,
thank you.
So what I'm hearing is the soonest effective date this could be would be somewhere in October 1st or later.
I'd say probably October or November, yeah. Because I think we'll be testing in October, so it'll probably be November before we actually get somebody through the process of backgrounds and everything like that. So,
amend the motion to reflect the November 1, 2017 start.
I second that amendment.
All right. We got a motion and a second to approve the position with an effective date of November 1st, 2017. Further discussion?
None.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. No agency reports today. Departmental reports. Facilities management. While we've got Cal here for the bid opening.
Morning again.
Yes.
Cal, your grass is looking pretty healthy out there.
It is. Yes. Yes. Golf course. Quality.
Yeah,
we got a putting green or something out there. Yeah, okay. Doing real well. Okay, I don't think I've done a quarterly report for a time or two, so here I am today with an update on what facilities management's been doing. I'll go through our work order numbers quickly and then highlights of the last quarter, and then any questions you may have for me, I'll try to address those afterwards. So the administration building, we had 117 work orders and 0 on calls. Group homes, 21 work orders, 4 on calls. Conservation, 19 work orders, 0 on calls. Human service center, 68 work orders and 2 on calls. Jail, 48 work orders. Now, something about the jail work orders is they come in with usually multiple items on their list, so it doesn't really reflect what we're actually doing there. But they also had 4 on calls for the jail. Justice Center, 78 with 2 on calls. Animal Control, 6, no on calls. Engineers, 9 with 0 on calls. For a total of 362 on calls with 362 work orders and 12 on calls. 0 snow days, thankfully.
From June to August, no snow days? That's shocking.
Yes.
Really, if that number ever starts to creep up, we got problems.
Yes. Well,
I'd
like to keep it in everybody's mind that it'll be coming. So,
yes.
Some of the highlights of what we've been doing is we had a safety training with Secondary Roads. We appreciate their letting us sit in on those with them. It's very helpful. Keep everybody up to date. Been working and completed the wiring and installation of the, I don't like this panic buttons. I'd like to call it duress because I have a lot of panic situations daily, and I want to be hitting a button every time. But our duress system is waiting for policy, and we'll be hooking it up and programming shortly when we get that back. Pre-bid meeting for the generator at Human Service that we opened bids for today. Afternoon staff keeps continuing stripping, waxing floors in all buildings. We had an issue that we had to set up portable air conditioning at Animal Control this summer when it was really hot. We had a sewer backup at Calhoun Group Home. We've dealt with a couple times. Dehumidifiers needed at Community Services for HSD, and that goes along with the heavy rains that caused, it wasn't leaks at HSD, it was actually backup of we had a, I call it a cloud burst earlier this summer, and it's storm sewer rain off of the roof that we have 3-4 inch downspouts that go into 1 4-inch that goes through the whole building, and when all three of them get full from the roof, it backs up on our heat pump condensate drains. We've had this happen a couple times. We're looking into how we can alleviate this with an overflow drain that looks like we can put that in. It's just a matter of getting it laid out and installing it. But that was what caused the backups, and it wasn't a leak. And like I say, it was rainwater. Also, due to that, we had a fire alarm, false alarm at HSD, which was due to the excessive moisture in the air that we had to put dehumidifiers in and suck out the carpets for the rainwater that really made a difference in the humidity in the building. We also had a power outage at the Human Service Center. There was a blown fuse on the transformer, which we go along with this generator, won't be an issue as it had been. For some reason, probably in all of our buildings, this one has been the most troublesome for power quality over the years for reasons unknown. Cable runs for the jail for additional cameras. We've been working on that. Installed carpet tiles in front entry of Justice Center. Replaced carpet tiles in entry to dispatch at Justice Center. And also along with this, we've been taking care of our normal duties of lawn care and landscaping and whatever else needs to be taken care of through the quarter. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Two things. Previous board placed in your responsibility the conservation. How's that done?
Very good. We've done a lot of updates there that I think they've appreciated greatly. We've seen some, we helped them with their deck outside last fall. And we put new flooring down in the main lobby there that I think looks real good. We found some problems with the HVAC where a ductwork had become disconnected and was causing some sheetrock issues. We put that back together, so thankfully we won't have to tear the sheetrock out and do repairs on that. And it's been going real well. So there's a lot yet to do out there. And
like all our buildings,
yeah.
McFarland Park has never looked better than it looks now, and that's due to our facilities department. But you said it, maybe I'm stealing your thunder of your next one. When out-of-county visitors come here for meetings, they can't believe this is a 50-year-old building, which is true for all our facilities, whatever age they are. Nobody can believe the amount of age and wear and tear they have, and it's directly attributed to Cal and his staff.
I will make a quick comment on that. We did have a gas leak problem out there this summer, too, and we found out we still had the original 27-year-old water heater in there that the gas valve had stuck, and so we replaced that with an electric water heater and put it on a timer, so it's only running during occupied hours. And we also changed the hot water out there with a circulating system, so now they actually have hot water in the restrooms now. So,
but now I have to run it for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm just curious when you sit there and say, You have safety training with Secretary Rose. Could you tell me what that is?
Just general, there's different topics such as equipment safety or just general first aid and awareness of outside. I think Joe is giving some talks about what plants to stay away from and just general equipment safety is what it usually is.
Okay. Once a quarter we have that meeting, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Doris, anything?
Nothing.
Down, great job. Oh, I got one question. Give us a weakness. Where had this board better be paying attention to our facility? What's coming down the pipe that you see that we better be aware of?
Parking lots are always a concern to me. I think we'll see some issues out at the Justice Center that we're going to have to deal with that will be a concern. We're already starting the process of looking at flooring at the Justice Center also. I've been putting a little bit of money in and taking care of the worst of the worst areas, but that will be huge as we go through the years of carpet and flooring replacement at that building, and we've also done that at the other buildings too, so that's something that's always there.
Perfect, thanks. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
No agency reports today. Departmental, or we're already into departmental. Now we're to IT departmental report. Barb.
Good morning, Barb.
Hi, Barb.
Good morning, Board. Barb Steinbach, Information Technology. Seems like this is a Monday that I shouldn't be here. Like, you know, the dreams, you come to work in your pajamas. That's what it feels like.
All right.
Just wanted to give you
I like the Mondays that are a little over the Tuesdays.
Right. I wanted to start giving you an update as to what we've been up to in the last quarter. As you look through my report, finished up a lot of networking projects, but one thing that I wanted to let you know about, and I talked a little bit about this in the manager's meeting last night, was the website refresh. We do have our project manager now. We had some preliminary meetings with Story County staff where we decided, what direction we wanted to go and who wanted to be involved. And so then Civic Plus sent us the scope of work. We approved it. And now we're going to meet with the project manager for the first time on the 13th. And she will set some direction. Now, one thing that Civic Plus recommends is only 5 people participate in something like this, and we disagreed. We are dividing up into smaller teams, for instance, design and infrastructure. But for 5 people to represent the entire county with something that is our face to the world just didn't seem right. So I think we'll be. The people who are participating are very excited and eager and want to really give their 2 cents worth. So I think we have a good team. We have about 13 people involved in it. But one thing I will note that we thought we did last time and did not do is we do have the automatic refresh built in. So every 3 years we'll be going through this refresh instead of waiting for 5 and finding out that we're way outdated. And the big trend now of websites is being able to view them on cell phones. And if you try to look at our website on the cell phone, it's pretty difficult. So that'll be one of the new templates that we'll be working with. Second topic I wanted to talk about, this is the update to our FTP site. This is something that, and I'm sure the Sheriff's Office will commiserate, in the time it took them to burn surveillance videos for court sessions. And so we came up with this FTP site, and Scott was one of the main players in this, and he's gone. But we thought this would help us get by until budget time, so we created an FTP site where the videos could be uploaded directly to the site without Sheriff's Office having to burn them. And then we created folders for all of the other attorneys so they could download what pertained to their case from their folder. Well, we've outgrown that storage that was designed for that, so we have purchased a new system, and it's still coming. It's riding in pieces because of the hurricane. Who would have thought? So what our plan is then is to build a rack-mountable unit over at the Justice Center, which will not only give us 3 terabytes of storage as opposed to the 150 gig that we have now. So hopefully we won't outgrow that. But also, it will give us faster speed because then we'll be on the cobalt fiber, whereas it's located here now, and we're kind of constricted by the Windstream connection that all of us share. So I'm excited and eager. We have had some attorneys not able to download videos. Usually that's, we create a little README document within each folder that gives them instructions. Some people, their systems aren't the same as what the instructions are. So we've reached out to them personally. The IT department has, and we've had some good success and some good response. So I'm excited about that project. I think my team did a good job figuring out an answer to an issue that wasn't planned for, just dropped in our laps, and I really think my team did a good job. So kudos to them.
Barb and Dan, that will be also like communications can be used for that if there are videos, or it's county-wide, correct, or is it just going to be limited to the attorney's office and the sheriff's department?
We just want to limit it to the videos that need to be used in cases, court cases. The folders have to be created individually and permissions have to be given. It's not something that we want to use for other purposes. If there are other needs that come up, we can develop something different, but this is solely earmarked for that.
Okay, thank you.
And as a result of some of our network upgrades, that leads me to the next topic, our go-to meeting. And I'm sure that you understand the growing pains with that. So we did do upgrades to our core switches and our firewalls, and the Polycom system that was formerly being used was obsolete and wouldn't work with the new equipment. And back in January, the justice system had decided that the judges would use the GoToMeeting solution, and it wasn't embraced and it wasn't pushed. Well, we had to push it here because we had no other alternative. And I must say, it's going a lot better than it did initially. Would you agree? And it's just like anything new. And what this does, so the judge initiates a meeting and then sends a link to us or whoever wants to participate in the meeting, and they click on the link, and then they're in the meeting. And it's a video. It's with a laptop that we configured for this purpose. This is also one of the caveats to this is the judge does not have to be in his office. He can be at home, on his laptop, wherever. So I think it's gone well, and so far it was just a learning curve. So I think the last couple weeks have shown us that they're all knowing how to use it now and confident that it will work.
Once again, I'm going to ask, would that be available for other uses in the county?
Well, this is a state-sponsored program.
Okay.
So we don't use it for anything other than court meetings.
Right, but the core switch replacement impacts us across the board.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. Networking. You didn't do anything with networking, Barb.
This last quarter has been nothing but networking, and Kyle has just been drowning. He's done a really good job. In part of the confusion, we were working in tandem projects for the Public Safety Network and for Story County. So sometimes we were like, okay, which project are we talking about now? So for the Public Safety Network, we did the firewall upgrades. And these are, we kind of skipped the last generation of firewalls because they sat in a box for 5 years and weren't installed, no longer usable. So I had to buy new. Unfortunately, the new firewalls are supposed to be with our new 911 network, and we haven't made that switch yet. We're still waiting for some network configurations from our networking team at ISU. But we did find out when, this was a summer of network cuts too, fiber cuts, we did find out when the Windstream connection between here and Ames was cut earlier this summer that it did fail over, but then it failed back. So we want to be able to use the new 10 gig network as the primary and the current 1 gig network as the backup. So just a few configuration VLANs need to be created for that, and then we'll be good to go. The multi-agency, also the 911 public network, did do a storage array replacement, and we are just starting to do server replacement. Now, these are servers that have been placed for 6 years, so it is time to replace them. Surrey County did complete firewall replacement as well. We did a complete core switch replacement. There's only one piece remaining, and that is the layer 3 routing, which is the network piece. And the only reason that's not complete is our vendor, IP Pathways, ran out of time. They had another engagement, so we plan to do that next week. The wireless network replacement is complete. We've been trying to get rid of the old equipment, and nobody wants them because they're so old. So if you know anybody that wants some Aruba access points or some controllers, you know, be sure to let us know.
Yeah, I run in circles to ask for those kind of things all the time, Barb. So
I wondered about that. I thought I'd bring it up. Another thing we're working on now, and I just wanted to mention, too, we talked about the generator earlier at HSC. Our backup data center is at EOC, and we've been asking and asking. It's like, that's useless to us without a generator in the time of emergency. So this is great news for us that we're moving forward with that project. What we'd like to do, we don't have a redundant path between the admin building and HSC. So that's one thing we're looking at, and that would involve fiber and railroad tracks. So it might be kind of costly. What we may do is utilize some DOT fiber if that's available for us. That would solve all those problems and it's already in place. The other location is animal control. What do we do there? We'd like to get them on the network. And with the new building and everything, it makes sense. We've talked to a couple of different companies. Windstream thinks they can put a better connection out there. And we've also looked at a microwave connection. Now they're down in the valley, so the tower would have to be tall. But we're getting quotes in for those. So we want to do what we think is best to meet the needs of animal control. The other thing we were involved with was the selecting the vendor for the radio project for the sheriff's office. Selecting the vendor who would select the vendor who would select the hardware for us to use for our radios. So we did select Mission Critical, and they're based in Texas. I don't imagine they have anything else going on right now, but we're waiting to participate in the phase two of that. We did have some, I just wanted to touch briefly on some time card software. It's always been a problem with Surrey County. We don't have electronic time cards, and we've waited and waited for our financial vendor solutions to come up with something, and he has now. They partner with another vendor, so they have an offering that they'd like to show us. And the auditor's office, of course, will evaluate that and see if that is something that we can use. But it's kind of exciting. At least we're moving in the right direction for that. They did present it at ISAC in August and got a lot of good feedback from the different counties. So we're anxious to look at that. Another thing that we're working on is the mobile laptop replacement. 26 laptops have been licensed, configured, and tested. We haven't rolled them out yet because we're waiting for the approval of the new image. I know Sergeant Lenny was going to work on those, just testing it, using it for a day or two, and making sure that there's no bugs, and then we'll roll it out to everybody. So that should be something for our new staff member, Daryl Munoz. That will be his first large project. He and his wife reside in Ames, and he came to us from Raymond Hill in Des Moines. So I also wanted to mention, just since I presented this report, we've been working on ATV and snowmobile renewals for the recorder's office, and Paula has done a great job creating a crystal report that saves so much time. So she combined all the information, put it in a crystal report, did a mail merge, so all the addresses and everything are on there. All they have to be done is put in envelopes, and she did 685 of those. So kudos to Paula for that great job.
Good. Barb, thanks. Questions for Barb?
I can enter through the RFP process there. And so I think Mission Critical, many times I go downstairs and just be neophyte on the technology end of it, talk to an expert, and she gave some clarity, and it just helped make the decision process much easier. So thank you personally.
I'll say it.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to go back to networking projects to make sure I heard something correctly. For the E911 network firewall upgrade, we had purchased some packages 5 years ago, but were never installed.
Okay.
Was there a reason, like, because we knew we were going to
have... No, there was no reason. They said in boxes, this was just prior to Barb being hired here. And it was finally discovered that they were sitting in boxes. I probably brought the consultant in to do some review. Is that right? Have I got my timeline right? Or
yes. We didn't know what the boxes were. The networking piece of the public safety network is managed by ISU. We each contribute a piece of it. And so they were sitting in, and I said, why are these sitting here?
Yeah. Right hand not knowing what the left hand was doing.
Okay.
And one of them, I was highly frustrated, so thanks for bringing it up.
I'm sorry. I was thinking positive thoughts.
No,
and about the same time we knew then.
My blood pressure went up when she mentioned it, and now it
really went up. I don't know, but my blood pressure is at the same
okay.
time.
Okay.
When we found these things, I mean, these are hardware that were purchased, and they sat there, and they were never, ever utilized. And it is one of the great frustrations, and I just have to underscore again, it's from the time before Barb.
Well, then I'll end on a compliment. I checked out a projector last Wednesday, and the process was great. I just said the SysA, said what I needed. I said what time I'd come in. A little bit late, what a surprise. Okay, let's do this. And Kyle helped me. We checked it out. We saw that it worked with my laptop and everything. So I felt very confident when I went to the presentation. So there. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Thanks, Barb.
I just wanted to add a little caveat about the firewalls. IP Pathways, to their credit, there was no resale value on those after this amount of time because they have been discontinued. And they did give us a little bit of a credit for a trade-in. So kudos to IP Pathways. I'm not trying to advertise, but, you know, we were stuck then with the equipment that would still be sitting in boxes. So we appreciate what they do for us.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
Barb. We appreciate what you do for us. Other reports, this is discussion of changing the food service coordinator cook position to a food service supervisor cook position. The three amigos once again.
Thank you again for your time this morning, Board. So what we're doing this morning is we're bringing to you a managerial concept. Much as we do with many of the things we do at the Sheriff's Office, we want to put them in front of you guys so you have a chance to digest them, to think about them, and help us come up with solutions if the ones we bring to you aren't the right ones. And so, first and foremost, it's important for you to know we're not asking for another position. So that's not why we're here today. We're asking to change one of the descriptions that we currently have for our food service coordinator to a food service supervisor. And the thought process behind this is that, first of all, we want to make sure that we categorize all of our staff in the right places. And our food service coordinator, while they oversee the kitchen functions, currently do not supervise any of the kitchen personnel. We have detention officer supervisors who do all of the supervision of the staff, overseeing people who are in the food service industry and their detention officers. And their skill set is not one and the same. And so because the kitchen has such a tremendous impact on our budget, we want to make sure we have the right person in there overseeing everything, including the staff. So what we're bringing to you today for consideration to think about for us to get a chance to come back again would be to take a look at the possibility of changing that coordinator to a supervisor position, maybe see a slight increase in the salary as well, and for us to have that properly articulated in the job description for what they do.
So my question would be, and maybe we're at the very beginning phase of this, but what, if any, impact does this have on our bargaining units, making a change like this?
We would have to talk to both the line staff one as well as the supervisory one, because it'd have to be that one union would have
right
to...
Right now they're squarely in one,
right,
and now they would qualify for
it. They would have to basically say, we're okay with this one leaving this one, and this one saying, we're okay taking it into ours. It'd be the...
And how involved to this point, understanding we're at the beginning of a conversation, has HR been?
I'm aware of it.
They're aware of it. Okay. So really should view this as the beginning of a discussion with lots of different things to look at. What I would suggest to the board, I think it makes sense that you have a supervisor from the same area that we have something in. If all the other pieces can come together, I'd suggest that the sheriff's office work with HR just to see if it's worth developing a proposal and then get that proposal back to us. Or do you have anything other than that?
You stole my two questions, so really, no. But I get the fact that when you deal with food service, I think you have roll-ups in the state of Iowa, and maybe you have a federal, that I can see where you would want a little bit of expertise actually in the job performance. So I have, you know, an inkling of support on this. What I do concur for the fact that I was going to ask you what Ward he did. As long as our human resources department is involved in on a configuration basis, I think that this is something I look forward to talking about again.
And my question also has to do with then, even though you're not adding a position, you're creating a new position within the number of people employed. So, Alyssa, is this where then we would post it and advertise it and hire for the best person for the job?
That is all going to depend on how it works out with the unions. This is not going to be a process that can happen fast. There's going to be a lot of going back and forth, and it would depend upon which union contract it would fall in and what the posting requirements are within that bargaining unit. So, I mean, it's not a clear cut. More than likely, they can... if it falls within the command staff unit, they can post from within and move, and then they post for the open, or if there's an open position. They do have the cook positions full right now, is my understanding. We have four. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So there's not an open position right now.
Right. But to be clear, and again, understanding that we're at the beginning process, as you, Mary, as you visualize this, you would visualize one of those position and the person in it moving into this supervisory role.
Correct.
Okay.
Just to let you know, philosophically, I think it will come as no big surprise to you over the years. I've been questioning to critical of creating positions solely to move a particular employee into a position when it's a public entity. But I hear what Alyssa is saying, that with the unions involved here, there may be other considerations. So I'll wait and stay tuned.
And what my understanding of it is they have the need for the type of work. They don't necessarily have somebody tied to that. So it would be, you know what, they know they need supervisory responsibilities added to this job. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have anybody in that food service coordinator position right now.
Okay.
Good. Anything else? Or are we giving you enough? So what I'm hearing the board say is, let's explore it fully, make sure HR is included every step of the way and has full input, and then see what, if anything, you want to bring back to us for consideration.
Can I have a point of personal?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Very good. Look forward to having this follow up. Okay, big guy, it wasn't the punters on the football team in Wyoming a scholarship position.
How frustrated I was.
Okay. Thanks. Former Wyoming Cowboy standing there in the background. Anything?
Oh, okay, thank you.
No, anything county related?
That's just a personal point.
Absolutely.
Before he speaks out on me.
Certainly. The only other thing that I would say is just for public record, I'd just like to say thank you to Alyssa. She does a tremendous job for you guys. We know, as we step through these board of supervisor meetings, all the different departments and offices that we touch at the sheriff's office, whether it be Lisa or whether it be Cal or whether it be Barb or whether it be Alyssa helping us, and the staff that we have here across the county is tremendous. And so Alyssa is always a great, great pleasure to work with. I just want to add it on public record. Thank you guys for your time.
Yeah, bud.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, and completely agree. All righty. I guess you didn't see the Wyoming Hunter Rip on Saturday.
Yeah, but you like to rub salt in a guy's wounds. So
oh,
that
talked.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. Next is receive and review bids for the sale of bonds for $1.5 million. Renee Tweet and Leanne Harder. We're talking about the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor.
Good morning.
And the TIF bonding that we are in process of considering. Hi, Renee.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. Leanne, how are you?
I'm well. How about you?
Very well, thank you.
I just have a few slides just to set the stage.
As was just mentioned, this does relate to the CESCO Environmental Learning Corridor. The board adopted amendments to that urban renewal area plan, processing from late May to adoption in July of this year. And we directed staff to go forward with the financing piece. The board direction was to proceed with tax increment revenue loan agreement in early August. Treasurer Tweed did solicit bids from 8/24 through, well, it was last Friday, 9/1. So what we'll do here shortly is you all have a bid sheet. The action today is just to really review and receive them, or receive and review, I did that backwards again. And then the next steps next week will be consideration of a lender, and then set the, so you have a discussion, give some direction to staff, then the resolution, setting the day and time for the public hearing on September 19th. Will be next week, and then the 19th will actually be the public hearing where you said you have established the loan agreement. Are there any questions on the process? I'll turn it over to me.
I sent bids out to 7 banks, and I only received 2 back.
Oh.
As you know, the economy is kind of crazy right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I have one from Great Western Bank and Exchange State Bank.
Did you send bids out just to local institutions, or did you also send? It feels like last time we got a favorable bid out of Utah. We had favorable bid. That was the refi that we got out of Utah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last time I
so
think
7
we got
local.
3 bids left.
Okay.
We got 3 bids last time and only 2 this time.
Okay.
So, and I talked to all the banks. I followed up. Some are just not interested.
Yeah.
So I have Great Western at 3.18 for the full 10 years, and Exchange State Bank was at 2.65 for all 10 years interest rate.
Okay. 10 years. Which is what we, what Story County has typically bonded for TIF rather than going the full 20 years.
Yes. I believe all 3 of our TIFs have always been 10 years.
Okay. So that is the bid opening. We're coming back next week with a recommendation from you guys, and then we will proceed from there. Right?
And the public hearing will be official to actual day on 19.
Okay. Good. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Public forum number 2, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board can't take any action due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic? Seeing no one moving the microphone, liaison assignments. Laura, it's your turn this week.
Okay, so sit back here. I've got a couple notes. I'll go as quickly as possible. But first of all, as you remember, last Tuesday afternoon after the staff and elected officials meeting, staff meeting that we had, Drew Kemp came in from the ADC. We had a few department managers stick around and the county assessor, and they provided some input on issues that they were, they and their peers were talking about in other counties. Of course, Drew is not our official lobbyist, but he was a wealth of information, and he's connected, and he was able to provide information. I do want to let you know that one of the things that I brought up, I said that the 3 supervisors, we had not discussed this. I just wanted to let him know that as now I and the working group were working on the animal control ordinance, as I was making possible changes, a list of possible changes, I kept on crossing them off my list because of the legislation and the law it is right now. So I did ask him that if the chamber in ABC was did not have any opinion on a House file that's been presented that would increase the definitions and clarify definitions on animal abuse and animal neglect, and also that would look a little bit at making some types of torture and abuse a felony as opposed to a misdemeanor, I would ask that the chamber register as a neutral on it if they were so inclined. He said they don't normally take positions on that, but it was something that I think we found, or I found at least as I was going through everything. But I made it very clear it was not a board decision, okay, just something that I had taken a look at, okay. Next, heard a net this week, or last week, and we have the numbers for fiscal year 17, and Astoria County continues to be the biggest county that they serve as far as numbers of population, and they finished $330,000 in a net carryover into fiscal year 18. All right, which was about three times what they had planned on. That is the good part. It may be that some of that money will have to be spent in fiscal year 18, as I let you know. Boom, service delivery continues to go well. So that's very positive. But unfortunately, there are some problems that are arising from the transition from the Boone County Transportation, who was the actual previous contractor. One is that that nonprofit board is said that they're not going to provide a full audit as required when they leave, and so Hurd is been in contact with Mary Mosman's office, the Secretary of State office, and they're going to try and work through that because it's a requirement for Hurd, but don't be surprised if in the fiscal year when the audits are done by the state auditor's office, that there's a ding for that. You can't force another board, really, to provide the full audit. In addition, this Boone County Transportation is left $67,000 of unpaid bills with Moffitt over in Boone. And as part of that, they were diverting the money that Herta was giving them into basic operations instead of some of it having to go for vehicle maintenance. So in the last couple months, over the summer, the engines of three buses blew up. That's the term that was being used. But anyway, at about $11,000 a piece, we heard the board is paying for one of them directly because it did. It went into the shop after July 1. The other two, we don't know where we're going to end up on, obviously. But I just want to let you know there are some, there may be some further updates there. The money is there in Herta to go ahead and handle this. It's an unfortunate situation, and the Herta board itself is going to change reduce the number of options for bill paying that had been available to the contract providers. There's still two other contract providers. Community and Family Resources. Over the last couple of months, the Community and Family Resources Board has started talking about asking the counties to help pay for a new facility up in Fort Dodge, about a $6 million facility. I had, from the very start, expressed my very strong feelings against this and explained to them that's not how Story County usually interacts with its service providers. About ASDAT. I've said a couple times where the county has been approached with special funds. It's been like YSS as a safety and health concern. And during then, I was not at last month's meeting, and they voted to go ahead with looking at some kind of ask. So on Friday, I met with the fundraiser. She was here in Ames. Once again, I reiterated my serious concerns with this about even not wanting to bring it before the board. They were looking at dividing this according to population, which guess who has the biggest population. Now, we do, granted, about one-third or more of all of CFR's clients are actually in Story and Boone County. That's just the way it works because CFR not only provides substance abuse, but still has, if you will, the Richmond Center. They're no longer the community mental health agency, but of course we're still providing a lot of mental health services there. And losing money on it, just like Ireland Ball continues to not be able to break even on mental health services. But so I tried to explain to them that, it's we just don't fund our human service agencies this way. We don't buy into capital projects. And during the discussion on Friday morning, it occurred to me something that I had heard said at actually the Story County Economic Development Group meeting, something about we in Story County would not get every capital campaign asked from the Miracle League / Inclusive Playground because it wasn't put out for bids. Apparently they're using a preferred contractor who's giving some in-kind. And I did tell the fundraiser that. I said, I'm not sure how this applies in this situation even, but I have sent an email to Jessica Reynolds asking for at least clarification on that. So I just want to make you aware of that in case you hear anything out there. But I've done my best and strongest to explain how Story County has been operating with business. They, of course, we know anybody can come and make an ask, okay? And I'm not telling them that anything that would be a vote, but it would be very, very unusual, especially since given on how much they want, would be about $800,000 from us. So just letting you know about the situation, and if there's any comments or anything you'd like to do to give me as far as further guidance, I'm acting right now as saying this is just something.
All I would say, I appreciate you letting us know that this might be a possibility. I know in the time that I've been on the board the last 7 years, and as far back as I can remember, for sure, Story County has never spent $1 on a capital project that was outside of Story County's borders. We have, in fact, put some money into some of our local human service not-for-profits inside Story County. But I can't think of a time. There's never been a dollar spent directly on any of the capital improvements up in Eldora that I can think of. The other places that were that will be an interesting ask to see how they justify. I'm not sure that there's a way that legally we can deem that that's an appropriate use of public funds. Mm-hmm. So it'll be an interesting ask. I appreciate you letting us know this. Sure. Anything else?
Just said I had the Rural Work Group Transportation Bears and Story County Group is meeting this afternoon to discuss the feedback from the Story County Economic Development Group, and we're working on a plan to go ahead and hopefully still liaison with TAG, the Transportation Advisory Group that includes a number of social agencies, et cetera. And I'm headed to Cedar Rapids tonight. So while you guys are dining on steak, I saw that might be on your schedule for later today at the Chambers Steak Fry, I'm hoping to be on the road. I didn't want to drive after dark. So that's why I did it like half a minute. Okay.
Thanks,
so thank you.
Marty?
It is that time again. United Way is coming out of the ground. We have one of our co-chairs here with us right now, Renee Tweet, and her and Brett will be helping spread that message through the county. I hope everybody has a chance to seek your soul, and this is a worthy group as anybody that's going to make an ask of you. Central Iowa Juvenile Justice speaking to Tony Reed and his organization. They just got done with their, are getting done. They're on the final roll-ups on their facility up in Eldora. They're hoping to get, on an ask basis, the governor there for the grand opening. It is an organization. They just gave us the fiscals, and it has got a substantial amount of success to it, and they're doing outreach into all the way to Dubuque County, Blackhawk County. Sarah Gordo was asking them. It is it virtually is a third of the counties represented in the state, and looking to get bigger. So stay tuned. It is aggressive, and they do a good job on our behalf, and the fact that for our contact with them, we are well served in a fiscal way. Can't say that about every county, but everybody has their own stories. Crestview is an evolving story. You get brought in. It every day has a new component, and to say that we are making progress is probably modest right now, but we hope to have some luck. We have a possible intercession with our county attorney here, as I saw this morning, that to get some movement in regards to the DNR component of this process. And it's more difficult than I would have initially thought.
September 15th will be here in 10 days. Okay, thanks, Marty. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn.